Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. What is happening, Chris Carter?
Me and Dusty were flashing some gang signs
at each other and almost got caught on camera. Wow. That would have been a great way to start a Wednesday morning.
We have our statistician just over to the side.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to be on camera. Don't worry about all that.
I don't know Dusty's last name.
Well, that's embarrassing. You've worked with him 2 years. That's...
First name Rusty, last name Dusty.
There you go. What he said.
Keep it up, Dustin Waite. You're doing great today already, buddy.
Okay.
That's his last
name. And now I know. Look at that. Learn something new every day. The Saints might never get over last year's NFC Championship loss.
I'm sorry.
Andrew Luck is already dealing with another injury to the Colts now.
The unknowable.
I'm sorry.
Some bad news for Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is dealing with a calf injury that'll see him miss the preseason opener. Says he's no stranger to this news. Andrew Luck's had a host of injuries during his time in the league. Head coach Frank Reich said Kevin Durant's calf injury, which led to a torn Achilles, was definitely a factor in sidelining his quarterback. Here's Luck on why he's not rushing himself back.
The nature of it is a calf strain, and I say lower leg because I feel pain in my ankle area and calf strain, and I guess I'll get a little specific. I've had images and x-rays and everything, and my Achilles is not at extra risk. There is no tear or swelling in there or anything that's indicated, but it's a calf strain, and we're on our feet a lot, and I know to be the best quarterback I want to be, to help this team like I want to help them, I'm not looking for average, and if I'm going out here with pain, I'll be average. I will feel like an average quarterback, and I'll be an average quarterback. That's not good enough for me. That's not good enough for this club.
You got to be careful with Andrew Luck after we've seen what he's been through the last couple of years trying to play through pain. See, what is your level of concern for him at this point?
I'm not concerned at all. Even before Kevin Durant, the reason why I knew about the Kevin Durant injury and I knew the potential of Achilles because there are hundreds and hundreds of calf injuries in the NFL every single year. There's so much starting and stopping, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The wide receivers are always pushing off from their natural stance. So one of your calves is always going to be sore. Typically now the wide receivers rotate around so you don't have a dominant leg. So you typically have two sore calves, two sore Achilles playing the game. Quarterbacks, their calves and their Achilles typically get sore because when they drop back, when they get to the top of the pocket and they climb, they push off of that lower leg to try to get back up into the pocket, and doing that every single day, it's going to make your calf sore, especially at the beginning of training camp. Even though you might be in great shape, you can't simulate what it's going to take to get ready for an NFL season. So guys come into training camp in great shape. But once you start, you put the pads on, you add the tackling to it, you add the mental distress, you add practicing twice a day and the repetition for what you're doing it, soreness is going to creep in. So I knew about the Kevin Durant when I tore my calf, then I tore my other calf in the same season. We knew that potentially if you didn't alleviate that pain throughout the calf or take the right time of time, it could go down to your Achilles. It's interesting that he said about his ankle because he probably tweaked his ankle, which led to him tweaking his calf, which ultimately, if you don't clean it up, you jeopardize the Achilles. I think they're going about it the right way. I think there are going to be a lot of athletes out there who have calf strains or issue with their calves because what we saw with Kevin Durant, it was such a galvanizing sports moment. We should have learned from that. But I think that what they've done through the years has progressed enough to this point. No, you shouldn't be worried about his Achilles as far as his calf is bothering them.
And we should mention that Andrew Luck did go on to say, I'll miss a couple of preseason games. I will be ready to go for the regular season. If he is rested and healthy and he's 100%, what is the ceiling for Andrew Luck?
League MVP. I mean, what the projections were when he came into the league. Andrew Luck's a guy that I will forever, at one point I'll see Andrew Luck in person, I will apologize to him, because he's a guy, of all the people I've ever talked about in sports, that I feel the most badly about how I evaluated, because he, when he was playing with an injury in years 4 and 5 and into year 6, he was did a good enough job hiding the severity of the injury that I talked regularly about, when's Andrew Luck going to show us the quarterback that was the best prospect since John Elway? When is he going to realize that potential?
Not knowing
when
is he was hurt.
Absolutely. When is he going to be the guy we saw in year 3 of his career but hadn't seen since then? Well, we saw it again last year after the first 6 weeks of the season, after the Colts started 1-5, after he shook the rust off of having missed an entire season. We saw Andrew Luck be spectacular. We saw the Colts be as good as any team in the league. So the ceiling for him is to win a league MVP, and the ceiling for the Colts is to win the Super Bowl. I don't think many people disagree on that. Now, whether you pick those things are separate, but this team has been built brilliantly by Chris Ballard, digging themselves out of the hole the Ryan Pagano era, Ryan Grigson, pardon me, era kind of dug them into. They have all of a sudden acquired a bounty of draft picks when they traded back from 3 to 6 and still got the All-Pro Quentin Nelson. They then double dipped in that draft by getting Defensive Rookie of the Year Darius Leonard in the second round. They, I think, did a good job supplementing their team this year without overspending in free agency. And we saw how dominant Luck can be now that he's a veteran quarterback and a fully healthy quarterback last season. So I think the ceiling for the Colts and Luck are as high as any team quarterback combination we have in the entire NFL.
Yeah, I think the expectations, it's hard to be higher than what they were, but they should be higher based on what he's been through, how he's performed when he's been healthy, and seeing the way that the team, the front office is built, and the way the team is being built, and how they're not overreacting to the market. We believe Frank Reich is underrated as a coach and believe that, man, his career is in great hands. He's been through some adversity. If this was early in his career, I believe Andrew Luck would probably be playing in the first 2 preseason games.
That's
and let's not forget, he didn't inherit a great Indy team. No, they weren't good, man, when Peyton Manning was hurt. No, they were not a good team. So they have replenished this roster. And if you look at the type of skilled guys he's throwing to, if they can get a constant running attack from Marlon Mack, and that, man, that would help Andrew Luck out, because that offensive line, last year, Andrew Luck only sacked 2% of his dropbacks, lowest in the NFL. A guy coming off the significant injury that he did, they got that fixed. That's not a short-term fix. I don't know if they'll be that good this year, but they'll be one of the best offensive lines. So they have everything in place for him to be great.
And once they started playing great, the final 10 weeks of the year, he was sacked 8 times. You're going to win a lot of games with any quarterback who gets sacked less than once per game. And when you mention the skill position, guys, you say all the time, see, look at your wide receiving core like a basketball team.
Man, they got it.
Ebron's your center. They brought in Devin Funchess as your power forward. T.Y. Hilton's your point guard. And the guy you like, Paris Campbell out of Ohio State, can be that wing, if you will, can be a guy who can run the football, like out, get the ball out of the backfield, but also gives them some size and some athleticism on the wide receiving core. So T.Y.'s been, I think, he's made the absolute most of his abilities up to this point in his career, and he's had a great deep ball connection with Luck. But Funchess and Paris Campbell, one or both of those two, should add a more reliable possession receiver.
Yeah, and let's not forget the awful start they got off to last year. Frank Reich, as a rookie coach, those weeks 1 through 3, they were bad. Weeks 4 through 17, Andrew Luck throws 34 touchdown passes. Only Patty Mahomes, who had 37, all right? Through weeks 4 through 17, people forget that. He was exceptional. This is a good team. I wouldn't be surprised a lot of people pick them as their Super Bowl pick.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up,
Will
the Saints ever get over losing the NFC title game?
Me and Dusty might have to collaborate on.
That's next on First Things First.
You think you know my Super Bowl pick already?
We got a great heavyweight battle for you coming up on Saturday as Brooklyn's unbeaten Adam Kovnatsky takes on Chris Areola Saturday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright here to tell you a bit about 23andMe. Sure, DNA testing can tell you about where your ancestors are from, but did you know it could also give you a lot of genetic information about your health and traits? Understand more about yourself today and inform how you live your life going forward. 23andMe allows you to better understand your health background. You can learn about many health conditions, such as harmful blood clots. The F2, F5 genes help you stop bleeding if you get hurt. Certain versions of the F2, F5 genes can also increase the risk for harmful blood clots. You can also learn about hereditary breast and ovarian cancer. The BRCA genes repair damaged DNA that could otherwise lead to cancer. Certain versions of these genes can increase the risk for developing breast, ovarian, prostate, and other cancers. Both men and women can be affected. 23andMe reports do not diagnose disease or describe overall likelihood of developing any disease. 23andMe tests selected genetic variants only. Visit 23andMe.com/FTF for important test information. Order your health and ancestry kit at 23andMe.com/FTF, and you can meet your genes in over 125 personalized genetic reports. That's the number 23andMe.com/FTF.
Time for us to go viral. It's another day, so we get a new video of Ben Simmons shooting jumpers in pickup games. Check out the form. Rocket center Clint Capella had a hilarious tweet in response to all the videos saying, quote, everybody can shoot in July.
Oh.
Twitter coaches chill.
Ben Simmons out there. I think Julius Randle, Rodney Hood, Michael Beasley out there with them. Now, this shot we got kind of the still shot of right there. The form was a little funny. Like,
we should put something up like this and be like, did he shoot the ball with his right hand or his left hand?
His
fundamentals
are not great.
Are awful.
But he's working, man. You want to see him working. This is a baby step. I implore you.
No, I don't. I don't want to see him on the court. I want to see him doing drills.
Well, maybe he is, but those aren't going to go
Nick,
viral.
Maybe I might be right. Maybe I might be right about this.
You might be right, but I'm saying they're not going to publicize him doing
the
drills.
When you take bad shots against bad competition, you create bad habits, all right? Like, he's already a bad shooter. Mm-hmm. He needs to take good shots from deep.
Right. The reason I said
does that make sense?
Of course it does. But the reason I said it's
if I was trying to teach a kid how to catch the football, you think I would start with one hand? You think I would be doing trick shots?
No, but you said last time you don't want him to do any dunks in these games. You want him shooting jump shots.
Right.
So this is a baby step towards that.
Oh, baby step.
Can I tell you what I saw yesterday?
What kind of contract did he get, Nick?
He got a max contract.
Okay, well, how much is that?
He got about 178.
And we're applauding him because of what?
Baby steps.
I saw Melo in the gym just working on drills, not playing in a game at all, just drills. That video went viral.
Oh, that's going viral.
But we're not
going
to talk about that.
We'll
talk about this.
Major League Baseball.
Stories to start your morning. Biggest of big brawls in the Reds-Pirates game last night. There's been a season-long simmering feud between these two clubs, and it boiled over. Five players ultimately ejected, most notably Yasiel Puig. What'd you make of it, Nick?
It was most notably Yasiel Puig because he got traded about 45 minutes before this brawl. Found out from the fans he got traded. Still said, hey, man, last night with my guys, I'm going to go out swinging. Now, the pitcher right there, he was a basketball player at St. John's, and he almost connected with that left, man. That would have been bad news for everyone involved if he connected.
No, he's a for real fighter. Yeah. There's a lot of fake fighters, especially in Major League Baseball. But, no, he calls it out. He runs to the battle line. Mm-hmm. I'm not into brawls, but that was exciting
to see. This was a good one, man. Puig's a real fighter, too. He's going crazy. The Reds manager had been kicked out of the game earlier. He comes back into the fray to try to fight poor 70-year-old Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle don't want none of that mess. Like, the Reds, they got Bauer yesterday. They lost Puig, but Puig went out with a bang, man. Look at this. Look.
No pun intended. That's
the best missed punch since Jermaine O'Neal on that fan that came onto the court.
Back to the NFL now. Julio Jones announced he will not be playing in the preseason. Also added he's not waiting for Amari Cooper or Michael Thomas to get their deals done, saying, we're not in the same boat. So you agree with this decision to skip preseason games?
I'm fine with Julio. I know him and Matt Ryan. They spend a lot of time in the offseason. I talked to both of them last season. They talked about how they're in sync with each other. They have experience, not only in-game experience, playoff experience. No, Julio works as hard as any receiver, not only during the game, but also in practice. Most veteran players, they don't need a whole bunch of preseason. So this one right here, Julio, every once in a while, I'll grant an exemption. Julio, he has it.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing the exact thing you recommended he do, which is if you have the agreement on the contract, show up so you're there with your teammates.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
This was like the word-for-word advice you gave. Show up and tell them I'm not going to play in the preseason games. Get my contract done. I feel like he, aside from Fitzy, who you have obviously special relationship with, this is your favorite receiver in football, Julio Jones.
I mean, he's a special guy. If they have a prototype, it's a picture of him. 6'3", lean body mass, not a diva, wants to play football, playing football. Great
blazing fast.
Oh, yeah, yes. All those
all
things.
All right, let's move to the Dolphins now.
You see, he listened to me. Ben Simmons won't listen to me.
New head coach Brian Flores says it's pretty clear to him that Ryan Fitzmagic is leading in the battle for the starting quarterback job. Fitzpatrick is battling with Josh Rosen, who Miami traded for back in April. And this all confused Nick just a little bit. Nick?
Miami. You got fortunate. You were able to get a prospect the level of Rosen for only a second-round pick via trade. We know, for good and for bad, what Fitzy is. You're not a contender this year. I understand Brian Flores. You want to put your best foot forward, but it's not just about this season. The Dolphins aren't going to do, I would hope, what the Cardinals did and have one and done for you as a head coach. It's about long-term for the team and long-term getting Rosen as many starts as possible to figure out exactly what you have in him is the best strategy. He has a year in the NFL already. I don't know why Fitzpatrick would possibly be the starter over him when we know what Fitzy is.
Well, this is the thing, Nick. When you run the NFL locker room, you tell the players, the best players are going to play. So I haven't been to one Miami practice. Let me tell you what's happened. Fitzmagic has looked a lot better than Josh Rosen. That's the only reason why Brian Flores would make this type of announcement. It sends a consistent message to the locker room, regardless of what your status is, draft or whatnot. If you do not practice well, he's from New England. You must practice well. Josh Rosen has not practiced well. And Brian said, it's clear to me. It's not a race. It's not close. It's clear to him. So he is doing the right thing as far as establishing his program. You can't put a guy in there on potential. Whoever plays the best should earn the starting spot. And right now, not one of my favorite guys is Fitzmagic.
All right, back to the Cowboys and the standoff.
Josh,
that is.
Josh probably heard that with them big ears he got.
Zeke versus Dallas. Zeke wants a hefty new deal. Cowboys clearly taking issue with the hefty part, mainly because Ezekiel Elliott isn't the only player Dallas needs to pay. Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper both looking for new deals as well. But according to Stephen Jones, taking care of them won't be easy.
That's my goal, is at the end of the day, we figure out a contract for Dak, for Amari, for Zeke that's fair, that's one they can be satisfied with. But at the same time, they've got to understand there's a real salary cap out there. And any money that we save in their situations, and it's not their job to manage the cap. I agree with that. That's our job to do. But any money we save is not going in Jerry's pocket. It's going to another football player. I mean, it's a hard cap. It's reality. We have to deal with it. And, you know, at some point, the money we spend on these great players are going to keep us, unfortunately, from probably signing a couple guys that we'd like to keep.
It's like selective memory. It's like the person, the Stephen Jones that we heard from earlier in the season, isn't the same Stephen Jones who suddenly was like, well, hold off. Yeah, we would love to pay you guys, but we got to be a little conservative with our hard cap. What was your reaction to what Stephen Jones had to say?
What he's saying is absolutely correct.
It is.
And nothing he's saying is wrong. It's just, to your point, not consistent with the messaging they've had previously. And it, once again, it's a reminder what has thrown off the Cowboys' planning is they did plan to pay Zeke in a year. They did not plan to have to make this decision right now. And here's the spot they find themselves in. Everyone talks about Dak and Amari only having 1 year left on their deal. Well, there's another guy who only has 1 year left on his deal. And unlike Dak and Amari, he was actually on the All-Pro team last year. And that's cornerback Byron Jones, a first-round pick that they want to keep. Next season, they already have under contract those three All-Pro offensive linemen who all make between $12 to $15 million next year. That is just assuming Lyle Collins walks out the door, Jalen Smith, who's a pending free agent as well, that they do or don't get something figured out with him. So, yeah, the Cowboys are in an incredibly rough spot, not because they don't have cap room, because next year they have, I think, the fifth most cap room of any team. But that's only because none of these guys have been signed. They know that cap room is spoken for. And they are going to have to make a hard decision. You cannot have three of the highest paid offensive linemen in the league on your team while also having one of the five highest paid quarterbacks, one of the 10 highest paid wide receivers, and the highest paid running back. You just can't. And so they seem to be leaning towards this entire time to paying Dak first and figuring the rest out. And the other part of this that I think maybe has screwed up their budgeting a bit is I think what Carson Wentz got and what Dak is demanding is coming in higher than they expected. That they thought they were going to be able to get Dak in the $22 to $26 million a year range, and Dak is talking in the $30 to $34 million a year range, and that's problematic. So none of this is wrong. It just, what these comments make wrong are the previous comments of promising everybody money whenever some local radio reporter would ask you about them.
Well, it's a constant issue in Dallas, the messaging, when they say it, and the obligations that the owner and other people in the front office make to the media. Jerry's doing a show every week. So every week we get sound bites off of potentially what could be a problem. If you continue to do that, go to New England. Kraft never says anything because he knows that Belichick, he might not be able to live up to it. So you don't get that cross messaging. In Dallas, because they're such high profile in how they run their family business, it's going to always be an issue. The one thing that Amari, one thing that Dak, and one thing that Zeke, more so than those other players on the Cowboys, that they need to realize is, I'm playing for the Dallas Cowboys. All three of those guys are very, very marketable and can make at least seven figures off the field every year. I would calculate that in as far as being a legendary Dallas Cowboy player compared to some other player. So I would calculate that in. If I'm Zeke, I got 2 years left on my deal, I would be trying to get more guarantees. Forget about the average per year. I would be doing that. If I'm getting Dak, I'm giving them a hometown discount, and I'm telling them, all right, I'm going to give you a hometown discount this time, but I plan on staying here for a long time. Amari Cooper was with the Raiders, and now he's with the Cowboys that he said he wants to stay with for a long period of time. So I just hope all three of those players, because they're not in the same class as Byron Jones and some of those other defenders and everything who aren't as marketable.
Sure.
They're making real money off the field because of that star on that helmet.
If you could keep two of those three players, because it seems like that's really all they can afford, who do you keep?
Zeke and Amari. I'd pay Zeke and Amari, and I'd make Dak go prove it. Prove me wrong, Dak. Cost me money. Make me make a tough decision. Make me to where I can't put the franchise tag on you. Make it to where I've got to make you one of the highest paid guys in the league. But I don't think he'd be able to do that. I think that you would see the value come down a bit. And, I mean, the NFL 100, it's a flawed list. I understand. But, man, they got 15 quarterbacks in that top 100. The lowest ranked is Carson Wentz. Nobody is looking at that list and saying, man, Dak got snubbed. That's 15 names. The vast majority of people think, okay, at his position are better than him. It's only 32 teams. He is the definition of a league average quarterback, which in 2019 is a good quarterback because there's so much talent in the league. I mean, that to me, that's what I would do. But there's a lot of things the Cowboys did that I wouldn't have done. I'd have been squeamish about paying DeMarcus Lawrence second most money any defensive players, or third most money any defensive players ever made. But they did that. They did that with their offensive linemen. All of a sudden, you got a lot of really good players that are being paid like great players, and it's preventing you from paying the one great player on your roster, Zeke Elliott.
One of Dallas's problems is that they're part of all these shows. There's other guys on teams that are good players being paid great salaries. But we're not talking about.
No doubt.
They have salary cap issues just like the Cowboys, but these are the Cowboys.
All right, let's move on to the Saints now. Their 2018 season ended in controversial fashion in the NFC title game against the Rams. And according to former Saints running back Mark Ingram, that's still a bitter pill to swallow. He said, that is something that no one on our team, no one in our organization will ever get over. That is tough. When you get to that point, basically one play from the Super Bowl, there's no justifying that. There's no comfort in that. CeCe, what do the Saints have to do to break through and win the Super Bowl?
Well, the last couple years have been tough. 2 years ago, the miracle in Minneapolis in the divisional round, they have that game won. All they got to do is defend the Hail Mary, knock the ball down. That's all they got to be able to do. Stephon Diggs takes it in. Vikings go on to lose to the Eagles, they go on to win the Super Bowl. Then last year, you think you can't top that? Oh, they did. They got home field advantage. They're playing the Rams. They got the – I mean, that was a great football game that was destroyed by a controversial call that changed the game. People say, well, you don't know if they're going to win. No, we don't know that, but you know that a bad call was allowed to continue, which shouldn't have been there now that they've changed the rules. That's how obvious it was to the NFL. Can they recover? You could never go back. You think Tom Brady right now, he got six Super Bowls, right? How many could he have had?
Nine. Certainly seven.
And that's the way he thinks. That's one of the things you're like, man, why is the guy out there? Because of those missed opportunities. Man, I got close twice. Two times in 3 years, we're in the NFC Championship game. Neither time did I take it for granted that, you know something, this is going to happen all the time. I don't think that they're going to recover because Drew Brees, if you look at the quarterbacks and the teams in the NFC, man, you got to run that gauntlet again. And are they as talented? I think their offense might have a little more variation than they have, adding Jared Cook as a tight end. I believe he's going to have an unbelievable season with Drew Brees. Drew Brees is the best quarterback that he's ever played with, and his ability to create mismatches and his overall speed, I believe they take huge advantage of it. No, you don't go backwards, because even if Drew Brees was to go on and win another Super Bowl, he's going to look back and be like, man, I should have won three.
Right.
If he has two.
And so, listen, what do they need to do? I know Coach Mangini will say that the years don't start where they finish. I get that. But they need to do exactly what they've done the last 2 years, which is, aside from a bad, very, very beginning to a season, they've been as good as anyone in football. 2 years ago, they start off 0-2. They then reel off 12. They go 12-3 until the Minneapolis Miracle. Last year, they started off 0-1. They lost to Fitzy and the Bucks, if you remember, in that shootout back and forth. They went 13-1 after that until a meaningless Week 17 game where they already had the one seed locked up. The only loss was that shocking nationally televised loss to the Cowboys. I think it was 13-10, that defensive battle. They were the best team in football after Week 1 last year until that non-call in the NFC Championship game. And what I'll say about that non-call is this. They could have won despite the non-call.
Yes.
But had the call been made, they would have won. It would have been game over in that situation if the call's made there. Now, they still can blame themselves for losing in overtime, letting Jared Goff drive the field. I understand that. But where you're nervous for the Saints is this. They're in a tough division, and those teams competing with them in their division, the Falcons and Panthers, have had the injury bug come up and bite them the last couple years, right? Falcons had their whole defense injured last year. Cam Newton got hurt last year for Carolina. The Saints been pretty fortunate injury-wise these last 2 years. And when you have home field going through your building, when you're in good situation injury-wise, when your quarterback is doing something only one other quarterback at his age has ever done, those are the moments that you need to take advantage of. Those are the moments where your safety needs to not dive out of bounds, needs to make the tackle against Minnesota, where you need to get the right call against the Rams, and they didn't. So I think they're an excellent team, but we know it's very hard to have three straight great years in a row, and I would say the Saints have had great years back-to-back already.
Even though Sean Payton, Drew Brees, people don't look at them, at their offense, as a physical offense, they've been able to add the physical component because Mark Ingram has been special playing with Kamara. Now you don't have Mark Ingram. How do they get back to doing that? I'm concerned about the usage of Kamara as a running back. He is not a 20-carry-a-game guy. So I don't think using him 20 times a game in that capacity makes them better. I do believe their defense will be better than what they were last year.
And just real quick to your point, C, that we don't always talk about the other guys on other teams that they're holding out or have contract things. Their best receiver, Michael Thomas, they still got something to work out with him heading into this year as he's trying to finally get paid.
And to your point on Mark Ingram, if you want to protect Brees, we don't talk about his age at all, but if you want to give him a little bit of protection towards the durability for the whole season, you would like to have someone in there like a Mark Ingram that could run the ball, especially late in the season. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, could the Cowboys actually trade Ezekiel Elliott? That's ahead on First Things First.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Back here on First Things First. Look who's here.
What up,
Eric,
my friend?
Mancini.
How are you doing?
Good.
How are
it's
you?
A little spicy on this desk.
We love it. Debating stats and things in the commercial breaks.
Oh, stats aren't a thing.
We'd outline everything we're doing here.
Them. No. Go over scheduling grids. Mm-hmm. Coach, you want to talk some Atlanta Falcons?
Sure.
All right. Why don't we do that?
Coach, when was the last time you came into a room and wrecked it? Besides my show.
Hey, the Falcons missed the playoffs last year after suffering a ton of injuries to their defense. Quarterback Matt Ryan, at age 34, considered an elder statesman by NFL standards of sorts, he's well aware that this team can no longer take seasons for granted. Matty Ice talked about this with Adam Schein on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio.
You can feel it just in the way that everybody's approaching practice or weightlifting sessions or, you know, in the meeting rooms. There's definitely a sense of urgency. There's a really good vibe in the building right now. You know, it's fun to be a part of it. This time of the year, everybody's optimistic. You know, I've been around a long time, and this team, you know, feels like we could be special.
You agree with Matt Ryan? Do you feel like people maybe are sleeping on the Falcons, that this could be a special year for them?
Look, I love this topic. I think this is a fascinating team for a couple reasons. This is the first time in NFL history that a standing NFL head coach has fired all three coordinators. Okay, so all three guys are different in Dan Quinn's fifth year. So I'm really curious to see how that works. Okay, so that's one element. Then this is the first time in NFL history that you have an offensive line that has the potential to start all number one draft picks. It's never happened before, but they have the chance to have every single offensive lineman be a number one draft pick. And then when you add in Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, you've got three more number ones. So you've got eight or nine number one draft picks on offense. So you should have the potential offensively to be really, really special. What was it, 2 years ago they were in the Super Bowl, or 3 years ago they were in the Super Bowl, 2 years ago they were in the playoffs.
Yes.
Do I think people are sleeping on them? It depends on how these coordinators come together, what that translates into, and that's not easy. That's not easy for the players that are in the building, for everybody to get on the same page. So how quickly they can do that. But from a ability standpoint, people could be sleeping on the Falcons in a significant way if they can come together and gel early with that new group.
And to your point, Coach, 3 years ago in the Super Bowl, league MVP, one of the 10 highest scoring offenses in football history. That's what they did. 2 years ago, despite having a ton of troubles in the red zone, they get to the divisional round of the playoffs, down six, first and goal, 9-yard line, to go to knock out Philly, to go to the conference championship game, and they just can't punch it in. And then last year, it was a combination of two things that wrecked their season. You alluded to one of them. They, by week eight, half their defensive starters on their back seven were gone for the year. Just devastating injuries. But also, I know all in the standings, all losses count the same. But in the first month of the season, when you lose because week one, the way your playoff game ended against the same team, first and goal from the 10, you can't punch it in. That's how they lost to Philly. Their next loss came in overtime to New Orleans. They lose the coin toss. Drew Brees drives down the field. And their next loss came, Andy Dalton throws a touchdown pass with 8 seconds left to beat them by one. When you start off 1-3, when you know you could be four, you're three plays from being 4-0, and you're dealing with all these injuries, I feel like it totally saps you for the year. I know great teams, you overcome it, but that is a really difficult way to start the season as far as emotionally and physically with the injuries. But the talent's obviously there. And I don't think this is a team that has to have a great defense to be a double-digit win team because of how prolific the offense can be. And we would expect Calvin Ridley to be even better this year than he was last year. You know what you're getting from Julio. I had no idea the stat about the offensive line, but that's really fascinating. And so we know how difficult the NFC South is, how historically it has turnover. It's very rare that a team wins it back-to-back years the way the Saints have. But they're as talented on one side of the ball as any team in football. And defensively, we've seen if they're healthy, they can be a top half of the league defense as they were in 16 and 17.
And yet, CC, we talk so much about this Falcons team that they'll go as far as Matt Ryan takes them, except last year they were riddled with injuries on defense. You look at a guy like Matt Ryan, he's not that quick-footed. He's not an amazing athlete. He's not that great off schedule, and yet he's one of the better athletes in the league that you like. Why is he so good, and why is he the perfect athlete for this team?
Matty Ice, to me, is one of the prototype quarterbacks. He's a good enough athlete that he can run any type of action. He's also a student of the game. I believe he's underrated as a passer. I believe because of Julio Jones and how they run their offense, I love Matty Ice. He can throw any type of throw on the field. His timing is impeccable. He's a grinder. He loves playing football. He loves the dirty parts about football. He's a tremendous leader. There's no one in that organization that doesn't have the utmost respect for him. Last year I did a game and just talking to people, just how impressed, how involved he is with the wide receivers in the offseason, working out at high school fields and raggedy fields. He takes it upon himself, not Dan Quinn, but the thing that you pointed out, man, he's going to need some help from a leadership standpoint. Nick, I don't believe their defense is going to be one of the top defenses. They struggle getting off the field. They struggle rushing the passer. And last year, after Deion Jones, their middle linebacker, got hurt, they couldn't cover anyone. So it's exciting to be able to hear about Matty Ice and the offense, but they got a lot of questions. I believe one of the top five defenses will be in Carolina. So we talked about the Saints. No one's talking about Carolina. Carolina is going to come back. And that division, as we've seen the last number of years, it will be highly contested. But I believe they're right where they should be because there's a number of huge question marks outside of their offense, Coach.
And I'm with you on Matty Ice. I interviewed a lot of quarterbacks either in New York or Cleveland, and you send the playbook or part of the playbook to the quarterback ahead of time. You have them study it, and then we'd sit for about 5 hours and go through and see what they had retained. And he was one of the most impressive guys I've ever interviewed in terms of how much he'd studied, how quickly he could retain it, how well he understood concepts, the way that he approached things, the humbleness with which he approached things, and that he generally had. It wasn't superficial. And you can usually see when you spend enough time with a guy in an interview who they are. And I loved that about him. And I think as an athlete, he's a little bit underrated. He's not a stiff back there. He can move around. Mm-hmm. He can make some plays. Some people, I think, underestimate his ability athletically.
Real quick question about Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn obviously got the job after being the defensive coordinator in Seattle and doing a great job there. I know you talk all the time about how you have to be the head coach of the entire team, but when your background, as yours was, is in defense, is it even more a kind of imperative on him to figure out how this defense can be better than Chris expects, at least a top half of the league defense, because that is where his background is?
Yeah, he's listed as the defensive coordinator, and Dan Quinn was my defensive line coach in New York, and he's got Jerome Henderson there, who is a future head coach. He was my DB coach. He played for me in New England. Really bright guy, working the secondary. He's going to have more responsibility. Bob Sutton, where, you know, we can agree to disagree on Bob, but a wealth of experience. He's down there as a senior consultant, and they all work with me in New York, so they all have worked together. I think that's going to help Dan still play the role on. He's also got Ben Kawika, who is with me in New York. He's their special teams coach, who he's worked with. So that familiarity, even though these are new coordinators, is going to help him still pay attention to the whole
thing. I believe Dan Quinn's underrated as a head coach, especially in knowing the players there, the environment, the vibe. It's a college-like atmosphere. They play music all the time. They have their food, Jenna catered in, chefs and everything.
I like
Arthur Blank runs a first-class operation, and Dan Quinn, I believe, is one of the underrated coaches.
I named my daughter after Dan Quinn.
Thanks, Joe.
Why?
No, you're supposed to say you did, and I was going to say no.
It was not a funny joke, but it was a joke.
Oh.
Coming up is Andrew Luck sitting out because of Kevin Durant. We'll discuss that on the first things
first. But it does sound to me like if the Falcons' defense isn't good, it's Coach Mangini's fault. You taught them all. They all came up under you.
Yeah, but I'm sitting at this desk.
Back here with Coach Mangini. Some bad news for Andrew Luck to pass along. He is dealing with a calf injury that'll see him miss the preseason opener. Luck is no stranger to this news. He's had a host of injuries during his time in the league. Head coach Frank Reich said Kevin Durant's calf injury, which led to a torn Achilles, was definitely a factor in sidelining the quarterback. Here is Andrew Luck on his injury.
The nature of it is a calf strain, and I say lower leg because I feel pain in my ankle area and calf strain, and I guess I'll get a little specific. I've had images and x-rays and everything, and my Achilles is not at extra risk. There is no tear or swelling in there or anything that's indicated, but so it's a calf strain, and we're on our feet a lot, and I know to be the best quarterback I want to be, to help this team like I want to help them, I can't be. I'm not looking for average, and if I'm going out here with pain, I'll be average. I will feel like an average quarterback, and I'll be an average quarterback. That's not good enough for me. That's not good enough for this club.
Coach, I love what he has to say, but I don't. When I think Andrew Luck, I don't think durable. It makes me nervous when he's got any injury, a lingering one. What is your level of concern for Andrew Luck?
It's not very high. I think one of the benefits of going through an injury like he went through is you start to understand how to come back from those things. You start to understand how to treat injuries, how to take a step back and maybe some preventative steps. And when you're young, you're so programmed to push through everything. And sometimes as you get older, the best thing you can do.
The reason why we're programmed, because we've got coaches like you from the time we're little. Yeah. Listen, buddy, suck it up.
Get out there.
You need to know the difference between pain and injury. Yeah, yeah. It's a fine line. And as you get older, you start to understand that. I don't love the comparison to Kevin Durant. I think as soon as you put that out there, everybody assumes that this is a lot more serious than it is. I'm more in line with listening to what Andrew said about this is a calf strain, and he's trying to be smart about it and put himself in the best position to start this season.
Frank Reich put it out there, actually made that.
Yes.
He should not have said that at all, because it just opened a floodgate for reporters to follow up
with.
Well,
I think that right now we're going through an era where athletes, we watch sports, and to see someone's career altered like Kevin Durant, and to think how many athletes out there right now have some type of tightness in their lower leg or some type of calf strain, you would have to correlate thinking, okay, calf strain, Achilles, Kevin Durant. I know when I tore my calves, we did a lot of work on my ankle and my Achilles because I have soreness in both, and it was put out to me, you must clear these things up. So I don't have a problem with Frank Wright talking about it, because the reason why I know the calf injury was significant, he didn't say x-ray. He said we had an MRI. We had some scans. We had some images. So that lets you know that there was some seriousness to it. And the whole medical world, I guarantee you change when Kevin Durant went down, because there are a lot of people out there having the philosophy, if you have a strained calf, don't worry about your Achilles. And after Kevin Durant, if we didn't learn from that, the coach should learn from that. Andrew Luck, that's his profession. He should learn from that. And one thing we do as athletes, when we get a significant injury, we look up any other athlete, because there's no comparison. Normally when I go to the doctor tells me, oh, you have 4 to 6 weeks. Well, that might be for the weekend warrior. That might be for the normal person. I want to compare my injury in real time to someone who has the same type of DNA, same type of mentality, and to see what does history say, and if there's some good notes out there trying to duplicate that, or even, as we talked about with Kevin Durant should be looking at Kobe, saying, how can I get back before Kobe got back? So I don't mind the extra attention to the calf after what happened to Kevin Durant.
One of the things that we always want to do with our athletes is not give them a timeline, not say 4 to 6 weeks, not get into that game, because every human being is different.
And you everybody, get back into a corner.
And, well, it's not even, it's everybody heals differently. So what's 4 to 6 weeks for the layman, maybe 2 to 3 weeks for the elite athlete. But sometimes if you put a timeline in somebody's head, they think, I've got to stay out 6 weeks, or I've got to stay out 4 weeks, or I need to come back in two. And that's not fair either, both of those ways.
And we should mention that Andrew Luck himself said, I'll be ready to go when the regular season starts. Assume he comes back, he's healthy. How good could Andrew Luck be? What is his ceiling, Nick?
Well, he's had the talent of a league MVP since basically year three of his career. And then starting in year four, he started to deal with that shoulder injury.
And I think right now is the appropriate time, because I don't think you're going to bump into Andrew Luck. I think you should look into the camera and apologize to him for like criticizing him. Yeah, she asked what the ceiling is versus an apology.
Okay, all right. Well, so I was getting there, my friend. But so Andrew Luck is, of all athletes across sports, the one that I feel most badly about the way I evaluated in the mid part of his career, because he was so hyped coming out of college. He was the best prospect since John Elway. He was, the Colts said, hey, Peyton, We'll see you later. We got the next Peyton. And Jim Irsay then said, man, if Andrew Luck's career ends like Peyton's with just one Super Bowl, it's a failure. And I saw this team be good but not great. And I saw Luck show the full potential in year three and then in year four not be able to duplicate it, year five not be able to duplicate it. And what I didn't know was he was playing almost literally with an arm tied behind his back. And we saw last year, after he missed a full season, after he had the first month and a half of season to knock off the rust, how good he actually is. That year three version, except smarter, and now with a good offensive line and a defense that actually knows what it's doing, better front office, better coaching staff, and from week seven until the Chiefs whooped them, they were the best team in the NFL in almost every category. They allowed the fewest sacks. The defense was awesome. Luck was spectacular. And so I do feel badly because I was out here on Colin Cowherd's show comparing his career to Ryan Tannehill. My first ever blind reveal was that one. And now that one looks dumb, and I get that. But I didn't know he was hurt. And this was where athletes get a bum rap for playing through injury. You're better off to say, man, I can't play, than say, no, I'll gut through it, because you got people like me that don't know you're hurt and say.
You saw last year with Cam Newton.
Absolutely. How good are you really? So what do I think his ceiling is? I think his ceiling's league MVP and their ceiling's winning a Super Bowl. Like, I think they have a really, really good team in place. I like the draft pick of Paris Campbell. The offensive line is extraordinary. The defense is good enough. And Luck's the guy that you've been saying he is the whole time I've known
him. And, Coach, I don't think you're more impressed with the front office, how they've managed it, how they didn't overspend, how they didn't overreact to L. Bell and his overall recovery. I think that you're high on the Colts and the direction they're going in.
Yeah, they're in a unique position. Everybody talks about building through the draft, and that's what you want to do because it gives you the best position financially to retain the young talent or to go get pieces in free agency to help support the young talent. They've got a quarterback that can lead them to the Super Bowl or multiple Super Bowls. And here they are with seven draft picks on defense, on a defense that was already pretty good, plus they added some draft picks on the offense, and they still have the most salary cap space in the league.
Yes.
That's a pretty good position to be in long term. So I like that. Now, the question I have is, did they address the medical staff there? The way that injury was handled last time, you know, that's an area where when they evaluate this injury, is it the same group that was evaluating the last injury, or have they made some strides there?
A couple things.
I'd be looking at that.
Watch their right tackle, Brandon Smith. He could be a liability. And watch. See if the numbers as far as sacks go up this year. I believe that they will. Andrew Luck was so good last year getting rid of the football that maybe that offensive line is not as good as the quarterback. He prevented a lot of those sacks by getting rid of the football.
And, Coach, you see what I just did right there? I hope it's a good template for you because in about 12 months, you're going to have to look in that camera and do the same thing for Patrick Mahomes. Just letting you know.
That was an apology?
Yeah, folks, we'll see you a little bit later on. You got to take a break.
I don't hate on Patrick Mahomes like you hate on Andrew.
Basketball.
Check the tape, America.
Yeah, we're back right after this.
That's why I can't get him to apologize to you.
He never apologizes to me.
You didn't apologize right there.
Some of soccer's biggest names, including Wayne Rooney and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, join forces to battle Atletico Madrid in the MLS All-Star Game. Catch the action 7:30 Eastern on FS1, also on the Fox Sports app.
I bet this game.
Nick would have butchered that, Jenna. That
Zlatan
was great,
Ibrahimovic? Atletico Madrid? Come on, man. Ain't nothing I can't do, man.
Let's talk some top plays here from last night. And then we'll get to Steph Curry. First, Oakland's Chad Pinder making a terrific diving snag.
I couldn't have done that.
This is,
I couldn't have done this.
Yeah, you couldn't have done it with your mouth closed. This is as long as a right fielder can run here. Great catch. This would have been fair, too. So this at least took away at least a double, potentially inside the Parker.
Ooh. Yep. If he dives and doesn't make it, might be inside the Parker. You're right.
Ed, minor league baseball here. Dayton Dragons' Michael Ciani stretching out for a beautiful catch.
That was great. I mean, listen, Reds got in a – hey, the Reds got in that big brawl yesterday. Probably got some suspensions coming. Why don't we call this young fella up? That void.
Doesn't he run and jump like Gardner for the Yankees?
Yeah.
Did he look like that in the air? He was younger, of course.
100%.
Great athletic play. Right, Hall of Fame hands of the week.
Here we go. I know, CeCe, you don't like practicing this, but, man, it looks good when it's executed. The old no look by Patty Mahomes right there. And someone will catch it, too.
Of course they're going to catch it. Man, it's thrown by Patrick Mahomes. I mean, to me, This isn't even news anymore.
You see the ref threw the flag.
Yeah, illegal contact on the defense.
No, it's not illegal contact. Still it's illegal for a quarterback, man, to be looking one way and throw,
throw
the other way.
That'd
be illegal.
Right? I like that, see?
See?
Good. You threw me. You surprised me there. You built my guy up. I like it. I wish Mangini was here to hate on it.
Mangini would not like that pass. Oh, moving on to the Warriors.
Let me see him do that in 7 Super Bowls first.
On his way to Canton. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.